That's okay.
We've had a lot of guests of late. We will make amends in the next couple of days. We'll have a guy who covers Colorado athletics as well as anyone. He's been a guest before. He'll be on tomorrow, though, from the Bup Zone. I highly recommend the Bup Zone, Brian Howell's work. He covers CU men's basketball, football, and anything that goes on with Colorado athletics. He does a tremendous job. He'll join us tomorrow. I've reached out to several people with the hope of getting them to join the show and haven't heard back. So for one of the few times with a two-hour show ahead of us, we have open phones. I felt like yesterday we didn't really, with Lauren Sisler's presence, with the session with Sarah, with Jonathan Smith, it did feel as though we had a few more things to get to in terms of open phones and text that perhaps we weren't able to yesterday. So I don't feel bad about that. And I don't really feel bad about not having a guest in that there is quite a bit to talk about. But I always enjoy the perspectives of other people, whether writers, broadcasters, athletes, coaches. It's just the schedule and all that hasn't come together in a way that allows us to have any guests. So the way to look at that for us, and we hope you will partake with the rare opportunity with no guests, at least for the moment, to call us. Maybe you don't call very often. Maybe you haven't called for a while. We heard from Mike in Salem the other day for the first time all year. So some of you whom we haven't heard a great deal from that we normally have in the past, if you're still out there, we can't hear you breathing, but we're glad you are and hope that you'll take time to text or call today as we have some real time, kind of soaking time today on the Joe Beaver Show to get to loose ends, to whatever you'd like to talk about with respect to the game on Saturday. There are a number of other things, too, and somebody has already responded. Thank you. We'll have open phones and text all day long on the show. 497-5356. 541-497-5356. Open phones to discuss the game, the broadcast, the season thus far. How are you reckoning with it all? Are you going to be okay? Are we all going to be okay together? Because there's a sense in which that loss did hurt. I can't.
Yeah.
All losses do is, John, you know, people were trying to get Jonathan yesterday to, well, given all that you were playing for and everything that was at stake, is this loss harder to come back from? One of the people yesterday in the media room was trying to get Jonathan. Jonathan is the most even-keeled. Yeah, it's interesting that he has this kind of gambler's mentality and almost, as Dave called it yesterday and Nick Daschle in the Oregon Live headline, recklessness in that personality. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't, there's a, it's almost an incongruity with how he kind of moves and lives and has his being, and yet will hit kind of wild, where did that come from?
Yeah,
chances.
Yeah,
it doesn't quite seem to fit. You know what I mean?
I do.
Some of these guys that run hot up and down the sidelines and are yelling and throwing things around and pointing the fingers at the officials and their players, well, you would expect them to run these kind of wild type of things here and there.
Have more of a gunslinger mentality.
Right.
Not the calm, quiet guy that, you know, never is too high, never too high, and never too low, mm-hmm. even though we're all going, you're kidding, this is the worst loss in the world. No, no, it's not. And then, oh, that was the greatest win, and you're going to win the national championship. Well, no, let's keep that in perspective.
Yeah,
I think ultimately that's good for the players because it keeps their head in the game.
I think you're right, Johnny, and we were, when you say, oh, we're going to win the national championship, we were all going into the Arizona game. We all, and most of us in Beaver Nation, still kind of holding out hope that in this final year of the conference, in this year of years, things were going to line up, and even with the loss in Pullman, if you ran the table, you could end up being the last one standing in college football.
Let me take you one further. On the tailgate show and on Friday's show when you were traveling, I basically said, and I'll back it up, I said, this is probably, one can say, the most important game in Oregon State history.
See, there you go.
Now,
it's your fault.
I know. That
sounds
like hyperbole.
No,
but
I know.
But I explained, I said, look, if you look at it on a line graph, You go up, you go up. Okay, fine. Now you get to Arizona, and the line is pretty high. It's really high. Afterward, it kind of goes down a little bit. Because, yeah, you win there, you figure you're going to win on the road at Colorado. Then you're looking at, okay, now you're at home against Stanford. So another straight line.
Right.
Okay, now you win that game, and you got everything going for you.
All the momentum in the world.
And you're hosting a team in Washington that has shown some vulnerabilities.
They have.
And it didn't matter anyway. We were better than them last year. Should have won that game. Didn't. I get it. So then I'm thinking, okay, now you're playing in a Civil War game, not in 2009 for the sole possession to go to the Rose Bowl, but for a chance to go to the Final Four. Because along with those individual games, you rise in the top 10.
Chance to go to the Final Four after first winning that rivalry game. Just go to Eugene and win there. And then go to Vegas and win there.
It would have made that particular game against Oregon is the biggest. Every game becomes bigger.
That's Jimmy Wilson brought that up in our pregame show, that with each win, then that magnifies and the importance of the next game and the next game. And now what Jonathan and the staff and I think all the players and even we as fans in a sense. Okay. That whole vision and dream you just talked about. Okay, what the CFP's out.
Yeah.
You're not, but Vegas isn't.
No.
But on the other hand, that may be our collective problem in terms of how that's why a guy like Jonathan at the helm, rather than come to the podium and say, well, our CFP hopes are shot.
We're done.
Yeah. So all they've got to do, they've got to find a way to win it at Colorado. And that's not going to be easy.
No.
It will not be easy.
Well, Not after losing to Arizona.
They are the better team, the Beavers are, and I do think can physically impose their will and, I hope, push them around on the line of scrimmage and run the football, and I do think create some havoc for Shedeur Sanders as, but that's a good offense, and the Beavers have shown some vulnerabilities, to use your phrase, on defense against different types of offenses lately, so... And Colorado's good offensively.
I actually thought the same and continue to think the same versus Arizona. The Beavers are a better team. I know statistics were even. They could have won that game by 3 touchdowns. I was watching it thinking this is like watching Washington last year, losing by 1,000 paper cuts.
It was painful.
Unfortunately, DJ did not have his best game. Pressure was on him, and he's got a really strong wrist, and he just kind of flicks the ball out there. And he couldn't find the open receiver. There were several times, and it showed it on TV. Well, he went for the underneath guy, but here you've got Josiah Irish wide open 20 feet to his right, and he didn't see him. So there was issues there. And then, quite frankly, some of the decisions on play calling throughout the course of the game, there's no reason they could not have won that game going away. But they didn't. And I fear that another road game might be the same where you actually lose to a team that I don't feel is as good as you. No.
So as we go today, Dave is already on the line. Tumwater will have plenty of time today, unlike yesterday. So Dave will start us, but we hope to hear from many of you and maybe some of you that we haven't heard from very often or at all ever. Let today be the day that you would make a call. Or text the Joe Beaver Show, and we have time to get into your thoughts about all of these matters. One of the things about this game, and then we'll get to Dave, and there's so many other angles and things to hit, but this is the time. We haven't spent a great deal of time talking about Neon Deion, primetime Deion Sanders, but we're playing him this week.
Right.
So, what are your thoughts about him, about the program, about the attention paid, et cetera, et cetera. Maybe even him as a player, a two-sport, Hall of Famer in football and very good baseball. I mean,
amazing.
Here we are. We're dealing with the phenom, the phenomenon of the great Deion Sanders.
Yep.
What have you made of his act, his style, his approach, his team? I kind of like the guy. You know what I'm saying? I mean, there are things that at times I look at a bit askance, but I think there's a good heart and a good spirit in the man, and I kind of like him, if that makes any sense.
You know what I'm saying? I agree. He says all the right things in response to, you know, saying something outlandish and then getting beat or something. He says all the right things. I think he handled the, what was the kid, Hunter, who got hurt, the two-way kid who got hurt in the very first, no, the Colorado State game. He did not bury the kid who hit him.
Right.
He was supportive of him. He said, that's football.
Right.
And he said and did all the right things in that respect. There was only one time where he disappointed me, and that was early when, you know, he brought up race and said, look at, you know, we're all these black coaches and all these black players. And, you know, I didn't think there was any cause for that. But outside of that, I think he says a lot of stuff, but he backs it up. And then when they lose, he doesn't have excuses.
No, he really doesn't, other than to say, we just need to go get some new linemen.
Well, he's not wrong.
No, he's not wrong. He also said, and I was surprised that he admitted this, I probably shouldn't be telling you all this, he said, but my son took an injection at halftime, a pain-killing injection at halftime of the game at UCLA. So I assume that's a cortisone-type injection for pain so he could carry on in the second half. Deion said, you know, I'm 100, meaning I'm 100% honest. That's how Brian Howell couched it, what he meant by, you know, I'm 100. 100% honest about all these things. So all of the sacks that Shador has taken, 42, all of not men even beyond the sacks, the number of times he's been put on the ground and hit hard. The young man, ultra-talented, is beat up. The Beavers, in that sense, are getting him at a time when, you know, this late in the year, in a sense, is just in terms of his sheer physical state of being, it's probably better for the Beavers to be getting this version of Colorado now than what TCU or Colorado State got earlier in the year.
I remember thinking when we looked at the schedule in the summer or at the beginning of the Joe Beaver Show, thinking, all right, let's take a look at what we've got coming up. And I liked the fact that the Colorado game, because already the hype was building, and we knew, okay, this is going to be a big turnaround. Are they going to be good? Are they going to be bad? Just a few weeks before the season started, with all the hype, it was like, this team was 1-11 last year. What are they going to be like?
Right.
And I remember thinking, great, we've got them real late in the season, and we'll have a chance to see what kind of a team they are by the time we get to them.
An outstanding start that captivated college football and the public, the viewing public and so on. You can't. Are they wrong? Colorado's had the best television ratings of games this year. That's the factor, a true number that is attributable to a man named Deion Sanders.
Absolutely.
All eight games, they've been sellouts, the ninth straight sellout coming in Folsom this week, and that's unbelievable.
Yeah.
So I have to pull back and give him great credit for what he's done in a genuine, energetic transformation of a moribund program, and so quickly bringing in more transfers than anybody else. I mean, it's a lot of people were kind of rooting for them to fail because we don't want other teams deciding, okay, here we go. He's taken advantage of this NCAA bylaw loophole, and good for people to find bylaws. I'm all for bylaws that are in your favor.
Loopholes,
yeah. And to be able to run, in a very real sense, first-year coaches can run off due to this obscure bylaw and the interpretation of it.
Mm-hmm.
They can run people off their roster and keep them on scholarship, but no longer on the football team and not be limited to 25 in a class, and Deion and others, Lincoln Riley did that at USC. A bylaw was discovered back in 2017 and has begun to be used by coaches who have like 18 months to live in this world where they can rebuild rosters quickly rather than the old-fashioned way.
Yeah.
So I give the man credit for finding ways to immediately lift what had been one of the worst FBS programs in the country.
Yeah.
Into the most watched program in the country. I mean, you have to give them credit for that, don't you?
You do, but absolutely.
Are there any aspects as you go, though, that, well, yeah, but, I don't like this, I don't like that, or are you kind of sold on them and worried about the game Saturday? We're going to get to phones and texts now. Tumwater was first, but we have, I think, a new caller, maybe, that we haven't heard from for a while.
Couldn't hear very well.
Couldn't quite hear his name.
It's either John or Don. I think it's John.
Okay. Dave, with all due respect to your call, we want to get to you, and you were first, but I want to make sure that we have time to fully explicate it. So let's get to John or Don up first, and then we'll go north to Tumwater. Hi, what is it, John or Don? Good morning.
It's the same old John.
Oh, hey, John. Good morning.
Right. In an attempt to get myself to stop chewing on the loss from last Saturday, I taped the UCLA or the Colorado UCLA game and watched that last night. And I want to tell you, I have never seen a quarterback look good at the start of the game and by the end of the game have the worst case of yips I've ever seen. From the Shedeur Sanders. I mean, UCLA worked him over.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just physical. I mean, by the end of the game, you should go back and watch it. He was just going down, period.
Yeah.
Wasn't really even attempting to kind of hold in there and make accurate throws. He was demoralized.
Yes.
And I think if they, you know, if they keep throwing, even if they don't hit home, if the Beavers keep throwing, blitzes at him from different angles, this guy's going to take him a few weeks to get over what UCLA did, I think. I think that might be a tactic they could emphasize maybe Beavers haven't done before. But I have never seen a quarterback so demoralized, and not necessarily physically hurt, but he was just...
Yeah.
I've never seen anything like it before.
I almost, to the point, and I have watched a lot. I haven't quite seen all of the very end of the game. I've seen the balance of a lot of the game when UCLA built the lead to 28-9. But I saw a lot of what you saw, John, and saw a young man that I felt bad for in terms of just how much of a physical pounding and beating he took. I think he's ultra-talented. I think he's poised. I think he's a great football player. But he doesn't have enough help on the offensive line. And so Dion afterwards, when asked about it, said, you know, what do we got to do? What do you got to do to help shore up the protection was the question. And Dion said, well, we got to go get new linemen. I mean, he didn't even say we got to coach these guys up better right now. He just essentially said, that's pretty much a lost cause. That ship has sailed. We got to go find some new linemen. He wasn't implying that the portal is open right now, like NFL free agency or a trade deadline where he can go get them. He just said that's priority number one, probably going into the portal again next year.
Yeah. Anyway, I'd like to see him take advantage of one last call on the roughing the passer call. One last comment. I think this falls in line with my comment that I made previously. I just think that there are way too many just simply flat incompetent Pac-10 referees. There are some good ones and too many bad ones, because there were, if you go back and look at the tape, there was more than one ref that had a good angle of that so-called roughing, which wasn't a roughing. As I recall, I can't pronounce his name, but Ojib.
Yeah.
I think he hit him more or less with his chest in the guy's shoulder.
Yeah.
And there were more than one refs had an angle on that. They could have reviewed it or talked to each other, and instead they let the thing go. And I think the call to run the kicker into the end, try to run the kicker into the end zone, end of the half. I think those two calls turned the game.
Well, either one, could have affected the non-roughing the call on Catan might have won the game for the Beavers. If you don't get that, if you pick up the flag, don't make that call. It's possible. And the other, well, there were plenty of other chances after that, but it would have been nice to have the lead at halftime. I will say that.
Exactly.
John, good. Go ahead.
Let me ask you one quick question, and then I'll take the answer. Do you think if this had been USC, so-called roughing the passer, or UW, they would have made that call? I don't think so.
Yeah, I think it's a fair question given what we've been witnessing of late. Good question, John,
exactly.
And thanks for the comment. Let's go north to Tumwater before our first break. Dave, good morning. Thanks for the call, and welcome to the Joe Beaver Show.
Thank you, Mike and John. Let me just offer a few benign tidbits before we go into media topics. First, perhaps you've noticed the ACC schedule for next year is out, and that you notice also the Big 12 isn't out yet, and I still maintain until the Big 12 schedule for 2024 comes out, that is still in play regarding Oregon State, Washington State's placement. I also had to laugh at the athletic director for Cal, who said in his release that Cal fans are looking forward to trips to Pitt and Boston and Syracuse. I mean, come on. You can't get Cal fans to barely to go across the bay to play Stanford, and you can't even get them to Corvallis and Eugene. Who does he think he's kidding?
Secondly, yes.
Russo in Phoenix, having the time of his life. He had an open-air show. The fans are roasting him. One guy called in and said, I don't understand why they're booing you. They should hoist you on their shoulders. The only reason they're in the World Series is because you threatened to retire if they won. Mm-hmm. So, okay. So let's move to the more serious topic. Now, Mike, I think it's safe to say that when I called in yesterday, let me just preface this by saying, I believe Jonathan Smith is a great coach. And if he has a long enough run, he will without doubt go down in history as the greatest coach in Oregon State history. But he has, like Achilles, like a lot of mythic figures, he has a blind spot. He has a poor sense of risk and reward. Now, for example, the most famous case previously was the 2019 going for it on fourth down in Pullman. That was absolutely the right call. But let's, as you say, explicate this in a little bit more detail, because I think it's worth dwelling on. Now, then you were a little queasy when I referred to Jonathan, Coach Smith, I should say, as being reckless. Now that someone from the media has also called him that, maybe that's not as offensive a characterization. I was prepared this morning to go into a whole semantical discussion about synonyms for reckless. Even Joe Freeman, the very first story in the Oregonian about this game, called that decision careless. Okay, so you don't have to agree, disagree, but it's a blind spot of his. I think, gentlemen, you understated the ramifications of what was at play in this game Saturday night. And John, you're absolutely right, and I want to pick up on it. This was the most important football game in Oregon State history, and this coaching staff did not deliver the goods. The team didn't seem to be prepared to play. The play calling was questionable. And then you have that ill-fated decision to go for a field goal there at the first half. This was set up to be a dream opportunity. As you stated, Mike, to maybe go to Vegas to win the conference, maybe get to the college football playoff. But this was the point I was in a rush to make yesterday. There's something even more important than the fate of this football season at play. The first round of the college football rankings are going to be coming out tonight. With a win, Oregon State, in its precarious strategic position regarding conference alignment, they needed to be in that conversation with Reese Davis and whoever else he's got on talking about Oregon State, because winning that game plus the possibility of future wins, it's of vital strategic importance to where this school and Washington State ends up in terms of conference location.
Yes. So, Dave, before you go any further, though, while I won't disagree with much of what you're saying, in fact, very little of it, the characterization, the magnitude of the game, and so on, I guess my question then to you is, yes, so now what? You know, I mean, yeah, let's all acknowledge together that was a painful, brutal loss, and maybe even for argument's sake, we can say, we can lay it at the feet of Jonathan for decisions or whatever else. Okay, but now what? I mean, you may be right. So you lost it. What do you want us to do about it? Keep saying how bad it was and keep questioning the coach about his decisions? I said yesterday that that's a big picture thing to maybe reevaluate yourself in the offseason, as you go forward with future games, maybe even this Saturday night in Boulder, in terms of evaluation. Jonathan seems to be pointing the finger at himself for several of the things that occurred in that late in that first half in particular. So I guess that's sort of what I'm asking now, Dave. As hard as it is, we've all acknowledged how painful that loss was, and you agree with John in describing it as the most important game in Beaver football history. That strikes me as a bit strong, but even so, let's just, again, for argument's sake, say that's true, and you lost it. So what do we do about it now?
I agree, Mike. I'm with you on that.
Okay.
What I'm about to say is in furtherance of your line of thinking, because that's why no doubt it was annoying, and I know I'm an annoying caller from time to time, if not most of the time. So, I mean, so it is as it is, as the saying goes. But that's why I made the point about John, somebody in that room has to do the follow-up questioning, or there will be no lesson learned. I fully believe that Coach Smith stipulates it was a bad call. He regrets it. But he's actually, by throwing that out there, I mean, and I'm 75 years old. I've learned enough about human nature. He's hoping that if he gets that out early and often, people begin to look past it, and bygones will be bygones. And in the 3 weeks when we beat Washington, Oregon, no one will care. And that, Mike and John, I think is a mistake. And that is why I think the press that covers Oregon State never does justice to the situation at hand, because you need to probe and the press on this, or the learning opportunity for Coach Smith will be lost.
Well,
that's why my criticism and the reason my concern about the lack of follow-up is because, human nature being what it is, unless this lesson is learned viscerally, there may even be a worse situation where there's a careless or recklessness about that call. And we can go into the call itself. Mike, I was listening to your call. I mean, the most obnoxious aspect of it. As you yourself noted in the previous possession, you said to Jim, are they going to fake it here? I mean, they telegraphed the play.
Yeah.
It had to be an idiot coaching staff on the other side of the field not to know what was coming, and Smith said as much. He was just itching to get this play without any sense of risk and reward. It was a terribly reckless decision.
Yes. Okay, let's just again, okay, for argument's sake, again, we'll agree on it. You're saying, though, that by not following up, or I don't know what the nature of the follow-up is, or you want John or somebody to say, why are you so reckless? Why did you make that decision when he already told you it was the wrong one? How much more do you want to go into that, I guess, Dave, at that point? Do you feel like if you don't, he just shrugs it off and moves on and keeps carrying on with the same behavior?
I do believe that. He's bluffing his way through. God bless him. And if I had been in that room, I would have said, Coach, you saw the critical reaction to your counterparts down the road decision not to kick field goals at comparable intersections in that game. Did you not pay attention to that? And is at what point does aggressivity, as he likes to call it, become carelessness? That question needs to be asked. I'm sorry, Jim.
Okay, hold on. Let me just interject. Nick Daschle did follow up. In fact, if you recall, he asked him, he said, is there, who's in your ear? And
right.
And do they ever say
talk
no?
You out of it.
Do you ever talk you out of it? And then his answer was that he occasionally will throw out an idea.
But the buck stops with him.
But the buck stops with him. He says, I call the plays. But here's the thing, Dave. If a child or someone you love hurts you and they just say, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have done that, do you rail over the top of them and say, well, you shouldn't have done it, and if you do it again, or do you accept that and move on? Because really, what else is there to say? There isn't anybody, even I don't even think, in an East Coast locker room, and I use East Coast versus West Coast because they're what you are thinking.
The legacy of Dick Young.
They're what you are thinking, and we aren't that way out here. And I say we as a collective, not we as in just Beaver people. As far as just pounding, you know, and you can go back to the great movies and some of the great baseball teams and the guys in the locker room, and they're just pounding away and pounding away. We don't do that out here, but we will follow up. And Nick did, and he asked about, you know, well, okay, but why did you do it? And did anybody talk you out of it? That kind of thing. So there was a little bit of pushback on that, but again, I was okay with him saying, and he said it immediately afterward to Ron Callen. Then he said it in the media that I saw a YouTube of at the stadium on Saturday night. And then he said it again to kind of lead off. And I don't, now I will say too, though, that I agree with you, Dave. There are some things, I agree with you here. There are some things that are kind of just glossed over a little bit, like tackling. I don't like answers that don't include, we're tackling today, we're going to learn how to do it. And that one's not really, no one ever goes after him on that, and I'm not going to do it because I work with him. I'm too much of a connection, but I wish somebody else would, because I just don't think you can learn and get better at something unless you actually do it, especially in a physical game like football. So I agree with you in that respect, but on this one, he made it clear. I screwed up. I shouldn't have done it.
He said it over and above, not just Monday. He said it at halftime to Ron Callen as he was exiting the field. He said it in the postgame to the media. He said it first thing Monday. Dave, I guess I'm just wondering what kind of, you know, how it does it ever smack of piling on if you just keep asking about, well, why'd you do that?
Well, I told you what I would have asked.
Yes.
I'm going to take a page out of Jonathan Smith's playbook. If I were in that room, I would have been more aggressive in my questioning of it. But I wasn't in that room, right. And we might disagree. But lastly, I just to pick up on your point, John, play calling. Martinez was averaging 6.2 yards per carry in that game. He gets 14 touches. Did you, either of you gentlemen, happen to see the Detroit game last night? Late in the third quarter, early in the fourth, they're back. The game's still in doubt. They're back up on their own 10-yard line. You see where I'm going with this, Mike? What do they do? The 7 out of their next 9 play calls are runs. They go down. They get the 2-possession lead. They kick a field goal. This team has a tremendous running game, but they get fascinated by the allure, the magic of the long. Jim Wilson was saying during the broadcast, there's not enough intermediate routes here for the quarterback to pick up on. So there's lots to discuss. I'm going to leave it here. I won't bring it up again. I've had my piece. You've been generous with your time. I'll get back to my book. We'll look forward to Colorado. Thanks for giving me the long line.
You bet. Thank you, Dave. Let's break on that note. Open phones and text. Your reaction on any of that? Want to go a different direction? Want to talk about Deion? You want to talk about what you remember about him as a player? Is the statement true, John? I know it's a subjective. Who's the greatest hitter in Major League history? I know people can argue about that in different ways. But it seems to be a consensus on Deion Sanders, the greatest cover corner in the history of the NFL. And not a great deal of argument about anybody else. So is that true? As we're in Deion week on the Joe Beaver Show.
No, I don't see. You're not going to get any argument on that.
Well, the way you say it, it means it out, of course. I mean, it's just, there's no. So I don't know enough about that league and its great players over the years to know who's in the conversation.
I'll tell you where argument comes.
Okay.
You and I make declarations. You and I make observations from our lens.
Right.
And it's the younger people who will say something completely different because they're not aware of what we've seen.
But I'm saying it's even younger people. I mean, who acquiesce. It's almost like, oh, well, of course. There's no who else is even in the conversation.
Well, they'll say, it's like the Bird versus Jordan versus LeBron. Right. It's like,
I know.
What do you mean LeBron's the best of all time? It's not even close.
Well,
and they have no idea. They have one lens and one lens only without having looked back at history.
Okay, I guess what I'm saying to you, John, is the young people today, though, would say, oh, yeah, Deion is the greatest cover corner ever, and that's a lens on history. That was quite a while ago.
I can't say that they would say he is.
Well, anyway.
They'd have to know who he is, and a lot of them don't.
We take a break. Open phones. Anything on the game week, the game last week, the game ahead, the season ahead? Have we done a disservice in any way to ourselves as a fan base, even to this young group, by having the high and lofty expectations that had us thinking CFP until Saturday night in Tucson? You know, was that ever, in your view, completely now is the Pac-12? I ran that by a couple of people Sunday morning when we were getting ready to fly out, just different people, fans and so on. When I said the Pac-12 title's still in play, you can still go to Vegas, win the Pac-12 championship.
Well, yeah, because you only have to finish second.
And you can. But there were people then pushing back on that, saying, okay, we're hurt, we're banged up, we weren't ever as good. Maybe you got guys hurt.
No. It's still in play.
Washington and Oregon, come on now. They were trying to tell me, they're fans, but they were trying to say, I've got to lower my expectation now. Well, maybe.
No,
the only, but just go beat Colorado and go from there.
Right, right. But the only way it doesn't happen is if you just get, you hurt yourself by, if there's any kind of a tie and you lose on tiebreakers.
If you have any thoughts on the overarching expectation, your own sense now of hope and expectation, how you're dealing with a gut punch of a loss and what you're looking forward to Saturday, how fearful are you about Saturday and on what grounds are you fearful? 497-5356, 497-5356, the primetime show. We're going there. What do you make of it? What have you made of it as the college football world has fallen over itself to kind of pay homage to the great Dion? It's lessened a little bit because they've lost four out of their last five. But do you still think that it's gone over the top? We're beginning to see some reality and truth here, and it's quieted some of that buzz. And you said you were expecting that, or is it still just as profound as ever? I still hear him talked about as much as anyone else, even now at 4-4 on national shows when the host deigned to talk college football. 497-5356, Joe Radio.
Back on the Joe Beaver Show. In this next segment, John and Mike will show you their musical skills. Guys, whistle along. Come on, guys, it's not that hard. Like this. Joe Beaver Show on 1240 Joe Radio.
Do you remember the, we've all seen the image, and if Carl Mazdam's listening as an outstanding photographer, Scoble, or other of the fine photographers we've had here in the Mid-Valley, Dave Nishida, I think about the art of sports photography.
Paul, in fact.
Yeah, Paul Rents.
Does a lot of nights photography.
Yeah, by even naming a few, I feel bad because we could go on and on. Yeah. I love that craft, that art. Yeah. I'm not a photographer myself, but I love when the perfect image is captured.
You do, and I'll just say before you continue that I've never met anybody until you and I started working together. Nobody in my life have I ever met who notices things in photographs.
Well,
one of the first ones you ever showed me, we were working on the morning show together. You go, look at this. And you showed it was pretty obvious, but it's like, look at all these guys. It was an old-timey baseball game, and all white shirts, all skinny black ties, and all male. It's like, where are the women in this photograph?
No.
But it was from like the 1920s.
Right.
And I thought, well, yeah, you're right. I've never really looked at it
well,
that way.
Brian Lenker may have, when I first started reading the Register Guard down the road in Eugene when moving to back when sports sections were sports sections and you know the work and the editorial craft, the columnists, the notes columns, the beat writers, the photographers, the Guard at one time was a great sports section. Whether you liked the fact that they're, you know, being in Eugene, they would be a little Oregon-centric or a little Beaver-heavy in that. Oh, wait a minute. It's the Ducks.
Yeah, great writers.
I'm sorry. I'm just channeling apparently what went on the broadcast Saturday night. They're the Ducks. They're not the Beavers. But anyhow, Brian Lenker's the best photographer I've ever seen, best sports photographer I've ever seen, and he was just a guy assigned to the Oregon athletic events in the 70s in Eugene. It's unbelievable some of the stuff he captured. So as a high school kid or reader of the guy, oh my gosh, look at this picture. I would discuss it with my friends in school. Did you see that? And they too would say,
Parker? But, yeah, okay.
But I always admire. Now, going into the game this week, Carl, if you're listening, did you see AP photographer Mark J. Terrell's shot? It's one of the best shots I've seen that captured everything.
Of what?
Well, you can maybe find it, but And I can't remember where I saw it even.
It's got to be out there.
But the perfect shot from the Colorado at UCLA game. Here's what you've got. You've seen the photographs, have you not? I've heard them referenced on national talk shows lately, so they must have kind of an iconic feel, and that's Y.A. Tittle, the balding quarterback, on his knees in the end zone with blood coming out of his bald head.
I know that shot, but yeah. I don't know.
Famous shots.
Haven't heard that being.
Of Y.A. after a game.
Yeah.
Nobody else around him. I remember as an 8-9-year-old kid reading a book called More Than a Game with great sports photographs, and looking at that almost by the hour. What happened to him? Why is he there by himself? How come nobody's helping him? Y.A. Tittle on his knees alone in the back of an end zone with blood coming out of his bald head. When I was 8 or 9, I thought, oh my gosh, what happened? So that was a photographer capturing that.
Sure.
Well, Mark J. Terrell at the Rose Bowl, they called it a sold-out Rose Bowl. Tickets distributed, certainly, because there were plenty of empty seats.
Colorado?
Yeah, Colorado. At UCLA, their first sellout in 8 years. Colorado going.
Wow.
71,343 is now the capacity at the Granddaddy. 71.
Wow.
When I was
down
once
from 100.
106. I was part of the biggest crowd in the history of that stadium. The biggest crowd ever for the Rose Bowl. I think it was 106,493. And had I stayed home when I had the flu and should have, it would have been 492. But I didn't. I went. I had to go to the Rose Bowl, Ohio State, USC, New Year's Day, 1973. Biggest crowd ever at 106 plus.
Now it's 71.
That was the sellout. But this guy, Terrell, whoever he is, has a shot of the tight end for UCLA, Carson Ryan, on his knees, Y.A. Tittle style. You don't see a helmet off and blood coming, but he's on his knees. You have Shiloh Sanders, who delivered the helmet-to-helmet hit that he was ejected for targeting, that Deion called a horrendous call. And even our guest tomorrow, Brian Howell, taking the Deion viewpoint, defended the call. And it's an example of we see what we want to see. Brian Howell in the Buff Zone wrote, Sanders hit Ryan with his shoulder just below the chin, and there was minimal helmet-to-helmet contact, quote-unquote. Now, we see what we want to see. We all see things a bit differently. And maybe in me seeing the targeting by Shiloh on Carson Ryan, I'm guilty. Well, you saw what you wanted. No, I suppose, point that accusatory finger at me and say, well, you're just doing the same thing that Brian Howell did. He saw what he wanted to see. A shoulder lead first and... Watch that play over and over, folks, and I defy you to say that Shiloh led with his shoulder. That was an absolute blast, helmet to helmet. A la Marcus Wheaton at Century Link didn't flag.
Yeah.
Here, the flag came out. Anyway, Terrell, this AP photographer.
What was his name? His name, Terrell what?
Mark J. Terrell, T-E-R-R-I-L-L. But somebody used it. All these photographers send all of their stuff. I'd love to maybe even talk to Carl about this. Carl, if you're listening, call now. Tell me if you saw the shot. And how is it that shots get picked up and you get paid something for it? He's an Associated Press photographer, Mark J. Terrell, T-E-R-R-I-L-L. He's got a shot at an angle that shows Carson Ryan, the tight end, on his knees after getting the helmet-to-helmet jarring hit. Shiloh Sanders in his flex pose, flexing his muscles, standing toward the sideline. That's it. Look at that, Johnny. You found it. With a penalty flag at his feet. That tells you everything to me that you need to know about the modern day of college football.
That's a great shot.
Yeah, so did you just look up Mark J. Terrell shot or whatever?
I put his name in and I put UCLA tight end.
And that came up.
Yeah.
Look at that shot. That is a fantastic sports photograph, in my opinion.
It tells me more about Sanders.
Well, Shiloh has laid the guy out with a helmet-to-helmet hit. The guy, UCLA's tight end, Carson Ryan, is on his knees, and there's a yellow flag at Shiloh's feet while he's
celebrating
and flexing after knocking the guy cold.
Mike Cass did that, but not over a player, and he got flagged for it.
That they've changed. They've loosened those rules. I don't mind even in a sense. I mean, young Shiloh here is following the example of his father. Shador isn't as much of a poser and a strutter, but Shiloh here is fault. It's kind of the world we're in, and guys make plays, and they signal first down, and they celebrate. I'm not against that per se. I just as soon see them get on to the next play and hustle their way into their next play and not be so about, look at me, look at me, look at me, right. Just my own style. But I get it, and I don't mind it per se. But that photograph captures everything you need to know about sort of, I suppose, what the game is like, what we value. There's a guy on his knees who's just been the victim of a helmet-to-helmet blast by Shiloh. And Shiloh, proud of that moment, flexing his muscles, and there's a yellow flag at his feet. It kind of captured everything about that play. That's
pretty
good,
telling.
It's good work on Terrell's part, the photographer.
I notice photographs, like watching a movie with someone. If they explain it and you look at it, you go, all right, okay, I see that. So that's what I get from when you look at photographs differently. Yeah.
And I love that. That's a great piece of work, but it also leads into the whole, Dion called that call horrendous on his son. Dion afterwards did say he's got to keep the hit low. He turned his shoulder all around like he always does. He knows how to hit. But I do think Dion, maybe upon further review, saw maybe it wasn't quite so horrendous. You could almost hear the helmets popping
in Tucson.
Let's go to Jim joining us on the Joe Beaver Show. I think it's our friend Jim Patterson. Yeah. Jim, thanks for the call. What's on your mind, and welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Mike. I appreciate the opportunity. I just wanted to provide maybe a different perspective and some commentary on what I see with the Beavers. Fortunately, during the week, I get an opportunity to attend practices. I can tell you that practices prior to the Arizona game were upbeat. The guys are confident. Coach Smith has created a culture of never being satisfied. The Beavers are going to bounce back in a big way this week at Colorado. And I have no question about that. One of the things that I got frustrated by in listening to comments and looking at social media, which I stopped doing after this game. People really need to understand our coaching staff, they game plan every week. The weeks we win, they implement a game plan and the players execute it. That was what was missing this last week. The game plan was set. I can tell you that the fake field goal was something that they believed in doing, because if they got a certain look from the Arizona defense against the field goal, they were going to run a play knowing that if the players execute the way the play has been drawn out, it would be successful. On the fake field goal, a key that I saw was that Atticus Sappington is fairly quick, but he didn't run with his hair on fire. He was very tentative as he kind of tried to make his way through, and there were a couple blocks that got missed. Bottom line is, coaches put together a game plan, and the players have to execute it. And that's where we'll see a big bounce back. We'll have a good game plan, the players will execute, and Colorado's going to get their butt kicked.
Okay, Jim, be careful. We don't want Dion to use that, because he's used just about everything during the course of this season to fire his own guys up. And we're collecting receipts, so.
I'm taking receipts, too, on Dion. He needs to focus more on, challenging his own kids as opposed to throwing trash at his linemen.
Well, he's gotten some shade, as the phrase goes, thrown at him from a lot of people for saying it was out of line for him to be calling out his own players in the manner that he did, in saying we got to go get some new linemen. The better line, I think Dion is just being, I think he is trying to stay true to quote unquote his brand by being, I'm 100 with you, I'm honest, because they probably do need to get some different linemen, yes. But I think still it's better. It doesn't serve those kids particularly well to talk of them that way after the game. I mean, you say we're going to do everything we can to work with these guys and help them get better better thing to say.
Leach did that all the time.
It's the right thing to say. Not just better, it's right. Thank you for the call, Jim. Good to hear from you. Jimmy, Johnny, do you agree with me on that or not?
Yeah.
I mean, even if you say, well, no, as I love about Dion, he's honest. Well, there's a lot of things we could all be honest about, and just because it's honest doesn't mean that it needs to be said.
No, I think the lines between collegiate and pro are being blurred too much. I mean, they're still students. I know they're old enough to go to war and vote, but they're, should we say, you shouldn't hurt the feelings? I'm tired of it all, the debate. It's just blurred lines.
Well, they may be, but I'm just saying the better line by Dion is to say, we got to coach them up better and help them get better at what they do. See you next hour.
They're coming from everywhere.
Seems to be a great deal of traffic here for country road, I think.
Corvallis, Oregon.
To see the total eclipse of the sun.
Hard to tell the nighttime from the day.
I'm talking about the sky, McIntyre.
Mike McIntyre and the Buffaloes are coming, amongst many others.
Seems to be a great deal of traffic here for country road, I think.
Sight worth seeing. I know how you must feel.
Yes, but not everyone's on board.
And look at that sky.
You look at it.
But for everyone else, excitement is sky high for life in Corvallis.
The eyes are amazing.
There seems to be a lot happening in it all the time.
If it's happening, you'll hear about it on the Joe Beaver Show.
I'm expecting something special from there. Keep your eyes skinned. I want reports.
Oh, you'll get reports all right. The best reports on the Joe Beaver Show with John Warren and Mike Parker.
Nothing I can say. Total eclipse of the heart.
And away we go with the Joe Beaver Show on 1240 Joe Radio.
Well, we heard the reference to Mike McIntyre as we go into the second hour. We want to get to open phones. I asked you to play 17 specifically because it's a reference to a Colorado coach in McIntyre. Long gone. Mike had one of the two winning seasons in the last 15 years when one of the more anomalous seasons in the history of college football occurred under Mike McIntyre's watch when they won the South and went 8-1.
What year was it when they beat Oregon State to get like a first win? Was it a first win in conference play, a first win of the year? That was the particular year that I spotted for their play-by-play guy.
Yeah.
And I don't remember the year, but it was a big deal for them. They hadn't won anything, and they beat Oregon State.
Might have been 2015 in Corvallis, maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the Beavers had beaten McIntyre in 14 in Boulder. After the game, Mike was running across the field mad at the officials for not making some calls. It was a bad look on his part. You may be referring to the 15 game. In 16, with Jim Leavitt as the coordinator on the defensive side, and they went 8-1 and won the South. And then everything else since then has been pretty darn bad.
Yeah. It's interesting, too, because this is a program, very proud program. National champions in 1990, great facilities. They were a part of the old Big Eight and the Southwest Conference, and they are, quote-unquote, a Power Five school. They've just been down for a long time.
They really have. And Dion, to his credit then, however you feel about him, has energized the program. They sold out season tickets 6 months before the season started. They've been the most watched college football team this year, just in terms of eyeballs on them. So you have to, I have to, I just acknowledge that that's Dion and his work and his doing. But in referencing McIntyre, we did see games between the Beavers and a Mike McIntyre coach Colorado team. But if this is going to be the last for a while for the Beavers and Colorado to play one another, and it will be as conference members for a while, maybe someday there's a reunited and it feels so good
or
type tune or not. What?
Or
yeah, I mean, it's possible. But it strikes me, John, to think about we in the kind of strange era of the Pac-12. They had two head coaches come and go that we never saw and that we never played.
Carl Durrell.
Now, played Durrell, and that's the Everett Hayes 60-yard field goal game 2 years ago.
Oh, yes, the overtime loss.
But, yes, but John Embry and Mel Tucker were head coaches at Colorado, and the Beavers never played those coach teams.
Well, Tucker was only there for a year, right?
Yes, and we didn't play him. John Embry for two, but it was not in the cycle. Weird.
Didn't we have a game against them before they were officially in the conference?
I think that's possible.
I know we did in basketball, but I don't remember football.
But I guess the question then is, one of the things we've talked about with these other teams we played during game week, what's your favorite Oregon State, Washington State memory? I mean, we've got a few to pick from. The Oregon State-Colorado series and rivalry, is there anything that comes to mind in it? I do think the win in 18 in Boulder, that comes to my mind, if you, because it showed me a little bit about what Jonathan Smith's all about and what the offense could be, and in the midst of a 2-10 year, that comes to mind. Anything else? Beavers, Buffaloes over the years. I feel like saying Colorado, we hardly knew ye. We hardly knew them.
A couple of things come to mind for me. One is that SID and his releases. Yeah.
Dave Platty, the legendary.
The other is the Dal Ward.
Dal Ward.
Yeah, the connection with Oregon State.
Yeah, those are interesting things. If you have any thoughts on the rivalry such as it is, any games that come to mind, open phones, we have some texts. There seems to be a little bit of a sentiment building, John, you're telling me, in the textual world. And we'll just say up front what we've said forever, much to your consternation. I think many of you would like us to be a little bit more holding Jonathan and everyone and hold them more accountable, ask the tougher questions. Don't be such softies and weaklings about all of this. Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying that all of that is wrong and you're wrong. There's probably some very fair criticism within that about our role and what we do. I understand that. I can understand your frustrations about not having a little bit more of a tougher approach when it comes to what we do and how we do it. I get it. But I will also say, having said, I can see why you wouldn't like it. It's not going to change a whole lot, given the relationship we have with the university, with the coaches that we work with in the program. I don't think I'm going to be the next guy next week. What in the world were you thinking when you ran that stupid fake field goal guy? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm not going to be that person. I'm not now that necessarily, if we have any shred of credibility, our last caller, Jim, a good man, great Beaver, and tried in a sense to defend or make be an apologist for the call because it had been worked on so much and they were running it well and it was a play that was going to work if they got a certain look. I mean, the only reason you run a play like that is because you've worked like crazy on it. It wasn't suddenly, hey, I now got an idea. Let's snap it to Saturday and run it.
No.
I mean, it had been well worked on.
And he got
a lot of yards. And that's a fine call if you're going for a touchdown to end the half and you're closer, and have another play, more time on the clock.
More time, or you're only five yards away instead of 20.
So I don't think I find no grounds to defend the call given the situation and given the fact that you'd kind of tipped your hand earlier.
Right, with the penalty.
To me, you scuttle it at that point.
Yes.
You just say, well, we'll save it for another time or whatever else. So I'm not defending it or trying to say anything that Jonathan or Brian Lindgren or Bray or these guys do. They're all geniuses and brilliant, and they're never wrong. I think on the air, Jim and I will talk occasionally about stuff that we see that you wonder about. You say, well, it seems as though this, or I'm wondering what the thinking was on that. I mean, we engage that way a little bit, not a lot, but occasionally. But there's also a part of me that feels as though that thing has been kind of beaten into the ground, cue up Tonya Harden, but beaten into the ground by everybody, that I'm almost to the point now, I'm not trying to defend it, but not wanting to keep beating it into the ground, if that makes any sense.
The coach said I shouldn't have done it. That's all I need to hear. I mean, what else are you going to say? Well,
we
better. You shouldn't do it again.
Yeah,
what do you say?
Why'd you do it in the first place?
He says, I shouldn't have done it. He said it three times. I'm okay. Fine.
So
it's over with.
Open phones, text, the rest of the hour. Let's get to Doug in Salem on the Joe Beaver Show with the big Dave on deck. Doug, good afternoon.
Yeah, good afternoon to you, too. What happens if we lose to Colorado? What does that affect our whole season? If that happens, we have only one winnable game. That'd be a home game against Stanford. But we have trouble with away games. Is this something we've had trouble for years? Because that Oregon and Washington game looked very, 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 very hard. So I'm just worried, you know, we're going to go up to a place that's real cold. I know we're practicing in the cold, you know, freezing at night here. But I'm just wondering, if we lose to Colorado, it's not the end of the world, but we had these huge aspirations of making it the national championship game, so we're back to earth again, I guess. But if we lose to Colorado, I put this, I think it's 6-3, which isn't that bad. But it's going to take us out of a better bowl game. You know, the Holiday Bowl looks like a long shot now. So I just wonder what your take is on that.
Doug, I'm not sure how to answer it other than to say a loss to Colorado wouldn't be good. I mean, Doug, I don't know what to say. You're right. A loss to Colorado would damage your postseason path and chances. But I don't know what more to say about that. The loss in Tucson was disappointing. I agree with Jim, our last caller, that I think the Beavers are going to bounce back in a big way and come away with a win, and we won't be having the conversation about what now, what next after Saturday night's game in Boulder. I think the Beavers are going to go back there and impose their will physically and win the football game. That's my belief. But if the other happens, I guess we'll have to take that up next week.
Yeah, I hope it doesn't happen. We all have these great hopes. I hope that we're going to have, you know, an 8-win season, and that looks in peril. Now, if we lose to Colorado, this, you know, we'd have a hard time even getting the 8 wins. But, you know,
yes,
that was my pocket schedule, you know, win-loss deal.
Right.
On another issue, on the Mountain West, you know, what's happened to us, Southern Cal has kind of shafted us in the Pac-10, Pac-2 now. And on the Mountain West, if we're going to try to rebuild things, I don't think we should shaft New Mexico or New Mexico State. Those are weak teams. And like New Mexico State is always in the, well, they're not always, but sometimes they're in the bottom 10. So I don't think we should, you know, try to get rid of them in a rebuild of a Mountain West. It would seem to be unfair for us to, you know, get rid of those two teams in some kind of rebuild. I don't know what your opinion on that would be.
Well, you know, Doug, I hear a lot of different things with respect to, you don't want to do to another conference what happened to the Beavers and leave people out.
That's,
you know,
an interesting
but it's down the road, Doug. Until we kind of know, I'm not ready to start talking about the merits of New Mexico or New Mexico State quite yet. I hope you're okay with that now too. But until we know a little bit more, Doug, I don't want to go there. You know, if we end up losing to Colorado, we'll have a conversation about what that might mean. If we end up kind of just merging with the Mountain West and who gets in and who doesn't, then we'll have that conversation. But I guess I'm not quite ready to do that yet, Doug. I hope that's okay.
Yeah, I haven't heard, there hasn't been too much talk recently about Mountain West or you know, the walk-on Big 12 stuff. Maybe just there's nothing happening there. Maybe some things are happening with the discovery phase and the settlement stuff is going on behind the scenes.
Yes, the mediation. Yeah, I think a lot of that is going on behind the scenes. And I think Oregon State's position is going to end up being a pretty strong one with Washington State in terms of what the two programs will receive to work with going forward. But I still don't have any strong kind of feel about what exactly those numbers are or where the teams are likely to play most of their games next year and the years to come. Dave, you heard earlier, Doug put out the fact that the Big 12 hasn't released their 2024 schedule yet. He thinks could be a sign that they don't quite know yet. And maybe there's still a path that Drake Toll and the other lock on Big 12 people have been suggesting that the two schools will, they said at one point, 99% sure we'll be going in. Well, I haven't heard that kind of number thrown about lately. But maybe there still is a path possibly to that, too.
Now, as a presumption of all this, that is that Oregon State and Washington State are kind of joined at the hip here.
Mm-hmm.
Is it like a solid thing where they're not going to allow themselves to be split up?
I don't think
they have to go.
Yeah.
They have to take both of them at the same place, like Cal and
yes.
That's a good question.
I think that's I think that's fair, Doug. Yeah, I mean, you know, let's just say for argument's sake, the Beavers had run the table and the Cougs had not and lost every game from here on in and lost out. The Beavers went out. I don't think you'd have somebody say, we're going to invite Oregon State into our league and that other school. Good luck to you. I don't think so. I think you're in it together.
Yeah, we have the presumption, but I never had anybody say it in so many words with, you know, the four people on top, you know, two ADs and the two presidents, but I think that's the way it should be.
Well, they've talked about being in lockstep, yeah, step for step. I mean, I think what you're saying, Doug, is you haven't heard anyone exactly say, no matter what, whatever happens, we're going exactly to the same place together. They may not have spelled it out that definitively, if that's what you're getting at. But everything that's come out of the president's and the AD's mouths has essentially been, we are partnering in this thing together, and we're going to fight this battle together. And if there ends up being a split somewhere down the way, that isn't in their mind or their plan right now, I'm based on everything they've said.
Yeah, that's the way it should be, you know, because we're left behind, you know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you, Doug. Good to talk to you.
I think it's a good assumption that what they're saying now and going to court together and going out on this limb and surviving and trying to rebuild the conference and the brand, I think it's a safe assumption, very safe assumption, that they would stick together and wouldn't kick one to the curb if one got an offer from someone better first.
Yeah.
Second, to Doug's point about, Doug said, well, we thought we were gonna go to the national championship. I don't think we did. I think collectively, Beaver Nation has done a really good job of enjoying all these victories, because online, on this show, I've not seen anybody throw out, we're going to go to the national championship or we're going to go to the Final Four.
Right.
I've never seen anybody do that. And as the wins kept piling up, all I see is great win, next one, this is going to be fun. Yeah. So I give all of Beaver Nation and this show really good props to keeping it cool. It's just that it's coming up now because of the one game that you needed was a gut punch loss. That's why I said Arizona was the biggest game in Beaver history, because never before, except for maybe 2009, have we had this game for this. And if this happens and you lose it, all of what can be goes away.
And so then had they beaten Arizona, you would have said the Colorado game now becomes
absolutely
the biggest in organization. So I see what you're
but
saying.
But I would have said that I
effect.
Expect it to be easier than Arizona. Yeah.
Let's go to Dave before we take a break this hour. Open phones. We'll get to text after our next break. If you've sent any in on the University Honda text line, we appreciate it. Dave, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I still think we win the next three games, and the last one's probably a toss-up. That's my opinion. I think that we got Washington at home. I think that's a perfectly winnable game at this point, even though we didn't take care of business last week. I don't want to focus on any of the negative. Everybody's already said what they said, except for the one thing I would say is whoever's making the play calls, I don't know if it's Lindgren or Smith. It seems like they try too hard to remain unpredictable. And for me, you know, what we did the second half of last year's Civil War game was beautiful football. And it, when they know what's coming and they can't stop it, I think the old Stanford coach used to say the same thing. You know, they know what's coming and they can't stop it. And that to me is beautiful football. It's a run, I don't care if it's a pass, whatever it is. So I think, you know, that's probably an Achilles that whoever's making those calls still wants to keep the other coach guessing instead of just saying, this is working, we're going to do it, they can't stop it.
That's a good, that's a fair observation, Dave. I would concur from the standpoint of, it almost feels like, until you stop this, we're just going to keep running it, right? So if that's Damian and Fenwick and Isaiah Newell sharing carries and just pounding it away and pounding away, so be it. Let it go. You know what I'm, but I,
absolutely.
I'm kind of with you on that. I felt like it was a bit uneven, and maybe I'm agreeing with you that it felt like maybe the team could have run the ball and quote unquote should have run the ball more in Tucson than they did. I'm not disagreeing with you on that.
Yeah. And I've just seen it over the years from like one series to the next, you're wondering like, wow, but Now to the positive. Now, this game and the game against Washington State, the one thing I saw is DJ plays really good football and the team plays really good football in the hurry up. When they've had to, they've been able to move the ball very quickly down the field and score points and put themselves in a position to win the games with an onside kick. Right,
right.
Both of those onside kicks, you had a chance to recover and have time on the clock to go down and win the game or tie the game.
Yep.
So I would almost like to see some of that hurry up mixed in at times when it doesn't need to be a hurry up. If that makes any sense.
Well, they kind of do, Dave.
The rhythm a little bit, the tempo.
They do that once in a while. You'll see them rush up to the line of scrimmage and get into kind of trying to take the defense by surprise with a quick rush up to the line of scrimmage and a quick snap and a give or maybe even an occasional pass. So I do think that is part of what they do. But you're right. They run that hurry-up offense very well. And have gotten themselves in games right back into when it appeared they were hopelessly out of a couple of different affairs. They put themselves in a position, as you said, twice, to have a chance to win the game thanks to their ability to execute in that mode. But that's almost, it's not necessarily contrary to what you just said about the running game, but it's a little bit different than just pounding the rock, if you know what I'm saying. I mean, and again, I wouldn't mind a steady dose of that in Boulder Saturday night. Just, you know, keep hammering away at those guys until they show they can stop you. Then maybe I understand the unpredictability part of it. You don't want to become so predictable. And the shots over the top are available when you've gotten everybody lulled in, the safety's walking up and all of that. You can hit some big stuff. But yeah, that's why they do it. You know, they want to keep you off balance. But I don't mind, you know, last year against Oregon, as you point out, there was no pretense of a passing game, none at all, and yet Oregon couldn't stop that run game. And if Colorado can't stop it Saturday night, keep running it.
Yeah, and that's kind of what as a fan, I mean, that to me is something I've always just loved. Like, they know what's coming, and they can't stop it. Yep. And that's the mark of a team that's, you know, at their peak in that regard, you know, whether it's the run game, the pass game, you know, I think, you know, we even saw who Jeremiah Masoli do it to us at the end of the Civil War game years and years ago, where we just needed the one stop and we could not get that guy on the ground. So,
I know,
you know, and that was painful for us, right?
But indeed.
I mean, as a fan, you go, wow, that's to have that in your pocket, no matter what it is brilliant. So, yeah, I still think we're three more wins and get to a very good bowl game. If we finish up this season with another 10-win season, two in a row,
that's good work.
You know, that's building towards what we need, right? And where we're going to go. We, you know, we were a dark horse for the conference title and a dark horse for the national championship anyway. So if we don't get there, we don't get there. I'm not, you know, putting my knife to my throat over it.
Good for you, Dave. Good to hear from you. We need a break. We'll come back with more. In fact, three breaks to execute this hour, so we'll take a quick one now, come back. Hope to get to some texts next on the Joe Beaver Show. We continue on the Joe Beaver Show. Mike Parker with John Warren. We've got some calls lining up on the Downward Dog phone line. We appreciate your participation today. Any thoughts on Colorado week, your fear, your sense of danger? Have you seen enough of Colorado to believe, hey, Beavers go in and execute, run the football, play their game, they're more physical, they're more experienced? Shador and Colorado are a little beat up. Deion's right about we need to go get new linemen, whether he should say it or not, and exactly that way he's taking some heat for it. They've had a very difficult time, and this is the understatement of the year, which is the overstatement of the year, but they've had a hard time protecting the passer. 42 times Shador has been sacked.
Good. Good.
And I expect the Beavers to
bodes well for Oregon State
to deliver a good game and win the game. Then you come home and you take care of business.
Yeah.
And then you do it again the following week, and you leave yourself.
Tough,
yeah. I mean,
no,
there's still a lot to play for.
Second place.
And maybe a spot in Vegas. Because that's not first.
Place.
You say to Jimmy Pearsall's dad, Jimmy said, Dad, I finished third in the league in batting this year. Carl Malden. Yeah, that isn't first.
Well, that's fine, Carl, but if you finish in second place, you go to
Vegas.
Yeah,
that's true. Okay, we've got a couple of Daves, so this will be four Daves.
Dave and Dan, actually.
Oh, it's Dan. Okay.
There's no E.
Okay, I
Dan.
See.
See that?
Okay, yeah, you're right. That is an N. You use handwriting. Let's go to Dave on the Downward Dog phone line. Good afternoon, Dave.
Hi, guys. Hey, I was just calling in. You know, I've listened to a couple of the callers really, you know, worried about the rest of the Beaver football season. And, you know, I think, you know, football is a funny sport, you know, especially at the college game. There's a fine line between winning and losing. And when you're talking about Power 5 football, you know, any team can beat a team. Especially when they're at home. And so, you know, the Arizona loss doesn't worry me as a fan or a supporter. You know, I thought the Beavs did some really good things, but Arizona played a great game.
Mm-hmm.
And that big, you know, that big receiver they kept,
yeah,
kept targeting, he had a very good game. Their quarterback played solid. And I think the Beavs can use that to get better this last half of the football season.
Dave, that's a fairly well-reasoned, rational sort of response to all of our, my own included, and others, just, well, we were on the verge of this and on the verge of that. If you're really thinking, if we're all kind of collectively thinking about these bigger things, even if we're not talking about them a lot, we're thinking about what the game meant and what's at stake and why Jonathan was asked, does this loss hurt more than others? You're saying that the loss, in a very real sense, yeah, the Beavers contributed to it by some of their decisions and things they did, but you're taking the line that there was a home team there too called Arizona that played a good football game.
Yeah, and, you know, I think, you know, when Coach Smith last week, you know, he talked about the job that Jed Fish has done at Arizona. Mm-hmm. You know, I think a lot of credit needs to go to Arizona's coaching staff and their players. He had them ready. And, you know, unfortunately, it's not like the late 80s, early 90s when the Beavers weren't good. The Beavs have a target on their back now.
Mm-hmm.
So any team they play, they're going to get that team's best shot.
They got it. They did. Arizona, and they're hot. Arizona's playing as well as anyone right now. And you're right. Jed Fish, who never played college football, is a guy that began as a videographer in his coaching life, as a staff member, as a guy doing video for a team, and has worked his way into being the head coach of a program that appears to be on the rise. So I appreciate your perspective, Dave. Thanks for making the call. Good to hear from you.
All right, guys.
Let's go to Dan up in Beaverton. Dan, thanks for the call. Welcome to the Joe Beaver Show. And we're having a little trouble here. Let me try it. He's on one. Who's on first? Hey, Dan. Dan in Beaverton. Hello. Hey, Dan.
It's Dan in Beaverton.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we got you now.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
No worries. The last 20 minutes of the game, we were ahead 13-10. And my frustration was our defense didn't adjust. I saw the player go in motion out of the backfield, and we didn't have anybody follow them. And they'd go to the outside with two blockers, and it was like 3-on-2. One missed tackle, they go down the sidelines for a touchdown. And we should have put a spy, a man-on-man with the guy rotating out of the backfield out of the slot, put on him so it's 3-on-3, and we probably would have won that game.
Yeah, I think you're talking about being up 17-13 at that point, and then Michael Wiley out of the backfield. Actually, they may have deployed him as a receiver, but he's a running back. He came from right to left and caught kind of a wheel route down the left sideline and scored, and now you're behind. And
there were like 10 plays in a row where they'd put somebody in motion out of the slot or out of the backfield. And I'd say, watch that number, watch mm-hmm. that number. And every time they dumped the ball off to him on the outside like that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, again, Dave, or Dan, pardon me. We could point to all three aspects in this game, all three phases. it was a bit of an uneven, erratic performance. You know, but the Beavers did defensively, while those plays you're talking about in the fourth quarter was probably not the quarter that exemplifies Beaver defense at its best, giving up the 14 points. And the players that you're talking about, for the most, they good game defensively against a high-powered attack that had been scoring a ton of points against other teams.
It was just that they did, and especially up until that point.
Yeah.
But two key plays got us, and I just felt we were just out of position, and I felt that if we would have put somebody on that motion player, and we would have had a better odds of not giving up those two big plays that were the 14 points that were the difference in the game.
Again, no disagreement here, other than you hope that the everything that those hardworking coaches and players deal with, and you just apply lessons and learn and move on, because everybody watches film and, okay, well, look what they're vulnerable to here. We can get them here. That outside passing game of Noah Fifita, we're going to see a lot more of that with Shedeur Sanders coming up. And that they have smart coaches, and they're going to do a lot of things that other teams have had, Cam Ward and other teams have had success with. They don't run it much unless this is a game where they try to fool you. Their leading rusher against UCLA had 14 yards rushing them, and they do not run the football. So maybe, though, their changeup is, everybody's expecting. They're going to be true to their identity, but they may try to run it more, given that the Beavers have had some difficulty in getting ball carriers down in some of their games, too. So I'm not quite sure what to expect in terms of the run, maybe a little bit more of that to also protect Shedeur a little bit, too. But the Beavers have got to be ready for, I think, a little bit of both, but particularly be better prepared for the outside passing game that Arizona and Washington State both used to hurt the Beavers pretty badly.
Yeah, that is my hope, is that they make that adjustment, do assign a man to the player going in motion that most likely they're going to throw to, and you may get fooled by a deception play once in a while, but to get beat constantly it's just frustrating, and I hope they do adjust. And like I said, we do have a chance to rebound and have a good season. But it's just, if you look in the past, there are two games that if we made that type of adjustment, we could be undefeated. And, you know, it's just
tough to
fathom that.
Thank you, Dan. Good to hear from you. Let's break. More coming up on this Tuesday. Brian Howell from the Buff Zone tomorrow. Give us his perspective of what the year's been like to cover this.
Wow. Lots there.
This traveling show.
Yeah.
Brian Howell will join us tomorrow on the Joe Beaver Show.
All right, Michael, we have texts on the University Honda text line, 541-497-5356. Amy, happy Halloween. Great student-athlete participation on Sunday for the trick-or-treat event in Gill. I would have voted for the men's rowing team with their Star Wars theme. Lots of laser characters and even one of the ships. That'd be kind of fun to be able to see that stuff. Women's gymnastics was very well coordinated as Men in Black inspired secret agents. As far as Coach Prime, do not like the nepotism with two sons on the team that get special attention all the time. And I dislike how he publicly criticizes his players. That's from Amy.
Thank you, Amy.
That's a good text. Shane from Corvallis. Did anybody else catch the TV crew calling our team the Ducks? Yep, we've talked about it.
I don't think anybody did. Now, based on what I've seen, John, a lot of people did, and even Dashiell tweeted, I'm hearing so much about this, I'm going to go back and watch it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this got not only Beaver fans, but the site awfulannouncing.com.
Oh, it did?
Picked up on and said, yeah, there were some problems with it.
Thank you, Shane. I don't know the name of this person, but he writes in and says, Dave's going to have a heart attack. That was when Dave called earlier today. Oh my gosh, I can't believe it. I wholeheartedly agree with Dave from Tumwater. That was the most important game in regards to the future of OSU football. I see you need
It's okay.
I see you need to put lipstick on the pig, but that game was a fiasco with ramifications for years to come.
I'm going to, you don't know who this person is.
But yes, I will still follow the Beavers into the Mountain West and gladly visit Reno, Vegas, and Honolulu.
Okay, so
I don't have a name on this
one. Whoever you are, write back, maybe an answer to this, or call, or anyone want to take on. It sounds to me, and maybe Dave and this texter is correct, but the nature of Dave's call about the magnitude of the game and how big it was, not just for this season, but for the long-term...
I said it was big, too.
For the long-term future.
Yeah.
But, John, I think you were saying it was big, too, for the basis of this season.
Yeah, this season.
Dave and this texter are almost going the route of Brent Musburger with Bo Schembechler at the end of Michigan's unlikely run to the national championship.
Yeah.
When Brent turned to Bo and said, come on now. He's been your interim head coach after, you know, that Bill Frieder had been, you know, moved on to Arizona State. We're going to have a Michigan man run a Michigan man, get a program, said Bo. So off goes Frieder. Michigan goes on to win the national title. And Brent, right there in that moment, Bo, come on, you can go ahead and name this guy's been your interim coach, Steve Fisher. How about it? You're going to be your head coach going forward, right? And Bo, God bless him, Bo says, Brent, this is not the time or place. This is on national television live after Michigan is hoisting the trophy. The upshot of what I get here from Dave in that text, and I've wondered, I wish we could have seen how it would have played out had the Beavers gotten to the Final Four and maybe been the last team standing with the trophy.
Yeah.
That would have been nice on a lot of grounds. I think what Dave and the texter are intimating is, and that would have clinched a path forward. There's no way that you could have been left out. Is that accurate?
There's no guarantee on that.
Is that true? Now, I do know eventually Steve Fisher was named the head coach. So what Brent was on was right in the sense of what Bo Schembechler in Michigan
did.
Yeah,
but he was putting him on the spot.
Right. But what I'm maybe if the Beavers or Cougs, either one, had done that, that somebody or somewhere, that would have forced the hand. We can't leave the national championship. Is that what the texter is implying?
Well,
but by not being in the Final Four and in the playoff, the national championship, or at least the playoff, or winning the whole thing, well, hello, Reno. Hello.
No.
That's what it sounds like that texter
is
saying.
If that's the case, then that's a long shot at best. That's a long shot to even get. I mean, Oregon State of Washington getting the Final Four. I mean, come on.
No.
You know, you just had, you had a great 10-win season last year, but you're a couple of breaths away from the Gary Anderson years. It's a long shot at best. We were enjoying the ride. 6-1 was a great ride.
Yeah.
I almost felt like after the Wazoo loss, it was over with, but 6-1 was a great ride. You had a bye week. You go into that Arizona game. That's why I proclaimed
important. I know.
With that possibility still very much alive, and that, I believe, being the hardest game of the next two.
It puts a lot of pressure. The whole idea, and I felt it, and we've touched on it here and there over the course of this season. Just go to the Final Four, guys, and you'll be all right. How difficult?
No guarantees.
I mean, a Pac-12 team hasn't been since 16.
Right.
Jonathan, the coordinator, by the way.
It would have made it very embarrassing for everybody.
Yes, and that would have been a wonderful thing to see.
Yes.
But I don't think it would have guaranteed anything.
No.
Now let's break. We'll come back. We got a final break to take. We'll get calls and texts down the stretch. But texter, is that what you were saying? That their only true shot to not be left out was to get there, get that far. And now the loss to Arizona means, oh gosh, hello Mountain West, here we come. I just don't know if it's that cut and dried. After this on Joe Radio.
Okay, we have texts. Lots of texts.
Hey, we lost Greg on the Downward Dog phone line. So what do you got on text?
I think Coach Smith needed to do. He owned the calls immediately after the game and during Monday's presser, We as fans need to accept that and move on. You know the coaches and players have and are actively looking to learn from those mistakes and get better. It wasn't that long ago we had had a coach that would throw someone else under the bus. Actually, he would say, that's not my department. I don't know how that goes. Beat the Buffs, beat the tree, beat the dogs, beat the yucks from Krahulik. That's our friend.
Thank you, Josh.
Thank you, Josh. Here's another one. The fake play was supposed to be if the Beavers were on or around the 5-yard line. However, to try it on the 20-yard line shouldn't have been considered. Right. Not only it didn't work, but jeopardized Addison to possibly get injured. Seriously, that to me is what I believe was reckless, and I agree with Paul. I'm hoping that all the fuss goes to show Coach Smith that he needs to show more caution on the trick plays. I don't think it was Paul, because Paul didn't call in today, but was this yesterday?
Paul did call in yesterday, and there may be something.
Yeah, maybe that's a leftover. Okay, well, anyway, thanks for that text. Dan says, when the commissioner of the league officials determine a football official is making bad calls or missing calls, is there any disciplinary action taken against that official, and do the schools affected by the calls ever hear about it? I think the answer is yes and yes.
I think so.
We just don't.
I don't think it becomes a matter of public record.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. I think they do. I know that Mike and I, we both know that there are officials watching officials for every game, and they're writing down certain things. In fact, they don't always work. I mean, they're local people who are in officiating, and we've known somebody who does that, and then they give that information to the league offices and let them know what they thought about the overall performance. So that does happen. Here's another text. Even though we are picked last, I like this team. Dean from Eugene mentioning the Beaver basketball banquet is tomorrow night. I would love to hear your thoughts on this year's team. Dean from Eugene.
You know, and Dean, thank you for that. We will, I went to the game Sunday, the exhibition game, and liked a lot of things. We're running out of short on time here. Tomorrow, we'll get into this a little bit more, and would love to hear from some of you about women's and men's hoops. If you went to the event, we heard from Amy about how well executed the trick-or-treat event was. But DeJohn Craig, remember that name, DeJohn Craig, a freshman from Indianapolis. Uh-huh. That's a basketball hotbed, that city. They love basketball. I think the Beavers may have found a guy in a point guard in DeJohn Craig who can be sneaky good this year.
Yeah.
Contributions this year. He can score at all three levels. It looks like he's got good court vision. He's quick. I like him a lot. And Tyler Bilodeau also looks like a guy. His second half against, Southern Oregon, but when the game was a little bit dicey in the first half, I think maybe a 5-point Beaver lead at the break, Bilodeau had a sequence where he just kind of took over the game on the offensive glass, on mid-range jumpers, on defense, on setting up other guys. I think, though, I've mentioned, too, Jordan Pope, of course, and the veteran presence. I think Dexter Ocano's due for his best year in wrapping up his season. Jordan Pope's going to be a scorer.
Good to see Christian Wright playing, because he had been hurt.
True. Good. Christian's playing. And I think Casey Abekwe is going to give you an intriguing presence in the low post. And Shoal Merrihill, I think, can affect the game profoundly at the defensive end. Just got to kind of measure his minutes a little bit, make sure he stays healthy. But I like some of the pieces that I see for the team this year. But those, DeJohn is a newcomer, and Bilodeau is going to be, he was good last year. He's going to be able to make a big jump, get Mikey Rattay back healthy, and that soon. I think this team has a chance to make a significant jump from where they were a year ago.
Yeah, good question, Dean. Alphonse writes in and says, if Beaver fans would apply the same performance standards to themselves as they do the Beavers coaches, we would have a fan base of millionaires. That is good. That is very good, Alphonse. Here's one from CVB. It's unfair and impossible to put conference alignment on one game or even a few seasons. Eastern Washington, Sacramento State, ? So that's a good point. Earlier he had written in and says, if OSU Washington State go to the Big 12, the only gain for Fox ESPN is to devalue the lesser conferences. There will still be the same number of teams in theoretically, quote-unquote, power conferences. He said earlier, I disagree with the characterization of the Arizona game as OSU's most important. I think it's projecting the importance of winning the conference championship onto one game, not every game the rest of the season. Well, it grows. It becomes the most important the next game. And my point was, look, if you win at Arizona, a team that's the hottest right now, one of the hottest in the conference, and in theory, will be easier to win at Colorado, and in theory, be easier to win at home against Stanford. And then you've got big time momentum going up against a team you could have maybe should have beaten last year.
Right.
And Washington, that's showing vulnerabilities. And then it all comes down to what would be the Civil War. That's why I put that declaration on the Arizona game.
Yeah, I know. I know. And there's a multiplier effect in terms of because of this, then that becomes even more magnified and important. But having, you know, put so much into that game, at least from our standpoint, as what it meant and what it could mean down the road. They've got to find a way as a group of players, particularly the players, the coaches, you know, are all. I mean, they're game planning Colorado, and we're on the plane on the way back Sunday, all in, trying to find a way to win the next game. And that's the way the coaches and are. I think it's pretty important for the players, and one of the jobs the coaches have this week is, hey, guys, if they were hearing all the noise about winning the league, running the table, not losing again, standing tall in the Final Four, okay, that's unlikely, the Final Four part of it. The other part's still alive.
Very much alive.
Go get yourself locked in and focused to the next task.
Yeah.
Take care of it and leave yourself all of those options still out there. But because you lost at Arizona doesn't now mean...
You know, I kind of look at it
We're
this
done.
Way. That took away an elite season.
Right. An 11 or 12 type.
Elite. Well, and Final Four type or elite, whatever. Now you can still have a great season because you've already, at 6-2, had a good
season. Had a good
season.
Yeah.
Already. It's
and
in the
just, you can still go finish it impressively and with a great deal of momentum and a lot of games. I think every game on the schedule, again, where Jonathan's brought the program. In 2017, 2018, I don't think you looked at the Ohio State game or a very few other games. Oh, that's winnable. Oh, yeah, they've got a chance to win that. They have a chance to win every game they play. I don't think any of us felt that until maybe at some point in 2021 when they won at USC and beat Washington.
Right.
Then you started, oh, wait, this program's coming around. Last year they won 10. This year they get into the top 11, top 12 in the country. They were on the verge of the top 10. I know, losing it hurts like crazy.
Yeah.
But they're still good, and I think the program is still on the ascent. In spite of that loss, they still have a chance to do special
Absolutely.
Things this year and beyond. We'll talk about a lot more tomorrow. Thanks for your participation today.